This is a podcast from Minute Media.
In the fall each year we all congregate, the bound all gathered at the church of tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God, a freshman. Drunk and obnoxious, we'll choose your fate. Ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday and last thing.
Welcome to the Saturday in Athens podcast. We're a Georgia Bulldogs show by dogs fans for dogs fans. I'm your host, Herschel Gurley, joined as always by my co-host, Boss Dog. And we are joined this week by our esteemed guest picker, Rennie Kern, DGD. Welcome back to the show, Rennie.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me.
So we had you on in January earlier this year. Give everybody an update. Let everybody know all the exciting things that you got going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the usual, just still trying to make plays in the business world and doing a lot of speaking, a lot of one-on-one coaching, all centered around leadership, team building, and performance. So working with a lot of companies right now, just going in, speaking to sales teams, speaking to their organization about their culture and about, you know, just helping their employees to produce at a higher level, improve their mindset, and improve their overall leadership. And then doing the same thing for individuals one-on-one as well. So it's been going well. And then just working on my nonprofit on my spare time, you know, working with a lot of high schools. We were able to do some camps. We're working on a mentoring program right now. And, of course, football, of course, with the Bulldogs doing great, man. I'm able to do some commentating every now and then here locally in Atlanta, in different cities as well, just joining in as a guest commentator and giving my thoughts on the dogs like I'm doing right now, man. So it's been good.
Oh, that's great to hear. I saw you had posted, I can't, maybe last week, about seeing Ed Milette speak and getting to spend some time with him. I was a little bit jealous, man. He's one of my favorites. He's awesome when he speaks.
He is. Yeah, he's a real deal, man. It was cool. I went to it was called Live to Lead. It's a conference that was put on by John Maxwell and his company, and they have a lot of amazing leaders there, including Ed Milette. So it was definitely a God thing getting to meet him, because I was not expecting that at all. But he was a great guy, real deal, gave a powerful message, man, and really gave some nuggets that I can, you know, take with me for the rest of my life, man. So it was great.
Yeah, Ed's a former college baseball player, and, you know, got a kind of centers his life and his mission around his faith as well. So I've always loved his message, and yeah, he's fantastic. I'm so glad you got to do that. What a great experience. Well, first of all, man, we got to ask you, you're more invested, I guess, in this than me and Boss even, because, you know, you're an alum, you're really, really attached to the program, former player. Awesome has it been for you to watch this season and to see this team do what they've done thus far?
Yeah. I mean, it's been amazing, man, just to see their growth. And, you know, considering last year with everything going on, the craziness, the pandemic, and guys not even being able to have a full season, it's been extremely impressive to see how they've been able to bounce back and just have the level of success that they've had. I mean, I know it definitely wasn't easy, like, you know, for us now on the other side. I mean, I have an interesting perspective just being a former player, knowing how much work goes into having a season like that, man. It's definitely not just about talent, and it's not just about making plays. Like, you have to have a group of guys that, like, collectively believe in each other and buy into, like, what the coaches is trying to put out on the field, man. And so for them to just do that, man, in the midst of being 18 and 21 year olds, that's not easy at all. It just requires, like, a certain mindset, man, a level of discipline, level of execution that doesn't just happen when you're on the field. It happens long before you get out there. Like, every day in practice, going hard, man. Going hard in the classroom, going hard in the off season when nobody's on campus. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. So I'm just proud of them, man, to see, like, how consistent they are. And, you know, if it's not the challenges that you face, it's also the success. So now that they are experienced that success, I'm even more proud of just the way that they're handling their success and continually just, like, improving, even when they're already doing good.
I'm really interested to get your opinion on this. Kirby has obviously talked a lot in the offseason, and you've now heard the players reflect this message as well, but they've talked a lot about being connected, and that the lesson for them of the 2020 season was the inability to be connected mattered a lot, and that they wanted to really focus on that. As a former player, is that something that changes year to year? Are certain teams more connected than others, more invested in each other than others? Or is that something that's pretty uniform and us as outsiders are blowing up and making a bigger deal out of it than it really is?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely something that is pretty consistent throughout any team that you go on. I mean, you're going to spend a great deal of time with guys in a locker room. You know, you go through training camp, you fight so much with each other, man, and have so many amazing moments that you're going to be connected. But there are those special, you know, I call them those perfect storm moments, whether it's after like major adversity or after like a team loses somebody that's a part of the team, where they rally around like a specific mission or just something that's extremely special to them that really transcends just that normal connection that you would have on a team that really, really makes it special. So that's the difference, man, is when guys just like, you know, whether it's a perfect storm, they lose somebody, or it's after something major that happens, or, you know, a group of guys like the seniors decide to come back. For whatever the case may be, you just have those groups, man, that it's just become something special. Like the leadership, the chemistry, everything just comes together along with the talent, right, which we have, which just creates this perfect storm that leads to great things. And it's rare that happens, right? Like we've had some super connected teams, some teams with great leaders, but it's like that special combination of leadership, connection, and talent. Man, that's when you have something really, really special. And that's what you're seeing right now, man. It's like we not only have, you know, the talent and all that, we also have depth. So it's like, yeah, regardless of who you have out on the field, man, everybody's just out there eating. And it's a really cool thing to see.
Well, I know the season has done your heart good because the folks leading the charge are on the defensive side of the football. It's just been a special thing to watch. And it seems to me they play really well as a unit. It doesn't really seem to matter who's in, where the rotation is. They all just seem to know where they're going to be, and they feed off of each other. What have you seen and what has stuck out to you the most about this 2021 Georgia defense?
Yeah, I mean, it really starts. It started for me a couple years before this. I think Kirby's been really building this culture and this mindset for a while now, and it's really starting to become like their identity. And what I mean by that is like Kirby, when I watch his defenses, there isn't like one guy who's making all the plays. It was like that early on. You know, you had like your Roquan Smiths and guys like that who were making a lot of plays. But like as time went on, as the years continued to progress, you started to see guys with lower stats. But it was like collectively as a group, everybody was making plays all across the field. So now it's like you really aren't. If you look at the stat sheet, you really aren't going to see like linebackers in the double digits, safeties in the double digits. It's going to be everybody contributing, man. Everybody staying fresh, making plays like defensive line. They're able to rotate. And I think that's the biggest difference is like he's able to get so much more out of his guys because of the fact that it's a defense by committee and everybody knows that they have an important role to play. And then you have that depth where it's like the next man up mentality, where it's like everybody has to be on their P's and Q's. Everybody has to be learning. Everybody has to be competing because you know that you're going to get an opportunity, man. And so you can never get comfortable regardless of what position you're in on that defense right now. And I think it just having that collective competition and just that level of depth, it just raises everybody's ability.
One of the key pieces in that defense, and I don't just mean this from a talent perspective, but I also think from a leadership perspective, has been N'Kobe Dean. And I think you'll have keen insight on this. What separates him and makes him special at that Mike position?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is just that consistency. You know, at that linebacker position, you have to be a consistent playmaker. You have to consistently be in the right position and, you know, taking the right angles, doing the right techniques, doing all the right things to make sure that you're making plays on a consistent basis. And that's how you earn that level of leadership and respect and, you know, and of course, playing time. And he's been able to do that over time, even with having a lot of great playmakers around him. You know, like you talk about the defensive line, Monty Rice, who was with him. you know, so many other great linebackers who've come through. Like, he's been able to maintain just because of his level of consistency. And that's where it starts as a linebacker. You know, it's one of those things where you have to have those instincts, but also you have to be able to get into the right rhythm. Because if you're making one play and the next play you're overrunning, or, you know, you're not in the right position, you're not looking at the right keys, and you're all over the place, can very easily turn into something bad. But I think another big thing, a big factor of why he's been able to maintain that level of consistency and performance is because of his D-line. You know, like, Jordan Davis is no joke. Like, to have a guy like that can take up 2-3 blockers on every play, that makes your job just lovely. I mean, I say it all the time, but a linebacker and a D-line is no different than a running back and his offensive line. It's the same type of dynamic. And so when you got guys up front like that, man, that can protect you, man, it really opens things up for you to just be able to roam and run freely untouched.
I'm so glad you said that, because that was going to be my next question, is how much would College Rennie love to have lined up behind Big 99 and Devontae Wyatt and Trayvon Walker and Jalen Carr? I mean, there's so many names that D-line just, I think, lets all those guys eat each week.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it would have been a beautiful thing. Like, I definitely can't complain about the D-line I had. I mean, I had Geno Atkins and Justin Houston and a lot of really great players as well. But, yeah, I mean, these guys now are just on a whole nother level across. When you look at the talent just across the board and the level of depth, like, our first, you know, team defense was they all pretty much got an opportunity to play at the next level. But when you start talking about the second string, third string, it was a drop off. But these guys right now, I mean, everybody, it seems like, is going to have an opportunity, from Nolan Smith to, you know, Jordan to Jalen to Adam Adamson. Like, they're all going to get an opportunity and probably get a couple years as well, too. So, yeah, it makes a huge, huge difference. And you feel it, man, as a linebacker, when you have that good, solid defensive line in front of you, because, like I said, you're just untouched. You're able to run freely. You're able to get sideline to sideline. And so you're seeing, you know, Channing out there making plays. Quay Walker's out there flying around making plays, looking extra. I didn't even know these guys were that fast. But it's like, you know, and then it takes pressure off the defensive backs as well, which is something that we were worried about early on in the season, because our DBs are really improving after losing, you know, Richard LeCount, Eric Stokes. Like, but it's like, we're not even missing them, right? Those guys, because of the defensive line play, once again, because they're able to get pressure on that quarterback on a consistent basis. I mean, this was the first week where we really saw, like, an offense really move the ball. And I think they really are trying to be more strategic now, doing a lot of quick throws, getting it out to the perimeter, because they just understand, like, you're not going to have time to really sit back there and go through your progressions. It's like, by 2.5 seconds, it's too late. And so, it really makes a huge difference for not only the linebackers, but the defensive backs as well. They've made them look really, really good.
So when the Georgia home schedule was released this year, there was a collective groan from the fan base about who would be coming to play between the hedges. And that's kind of been flipped on its head this year, right? This will be the second essentially top 10 matchup. Kentucky sits right outside the top 10 at number 11. College Game Day going to be in town this week. SEC Nation going to be in town this week. From your experience when you were playing, what kind of challenges do you think Kentucky will present this week? And what are some of your memories from the games that you played against them in your career?
Yeah, I mean, just like any SEC team, man, when you're, you know, ranked high and you got a team like a Kentucky who's used to being doubted, who used to be in the underdog, like, you got to know and expect that you're going to get their best shot. Like, everything that they can throw at you, they're going to throw at you. And then add in the fact that it's also going to be nationally televised, right? And that they're going against the number one team, you know, the Georgia. It's like, these guys are not just playing for, you know, what's at stake in the SEC, but also this has career implications down the line, as far as, like, if you have aspirations to play at the next level, which every guy does, right? In the SEC, they want to hear their name called, you know, on draft day and be able to have a solid NFL career. And it starts with games like this, these big games. Do you show up? Are you the one that makes plays against, you know, the guys who are top ranked? You know, if you're an offensive lineman in Kentucky, I'm then, you know, making sure I go extra hard to make sure I'm ready to shut down a Jordan Davis, because that's film that I can now use to justify why I should be drafted. So it's just like so many other things riding on the line when you play a team like a Kentucky or a South Carolina, you know, and normally where they would not necessarily go, they'll go as hard, but it's like everybody has now Georgia marked on their calendar. So they're just going to play. Their level of ability is going to be that much higher than it normally would. And so I remember definitely playing against Kentucky that had some very, very talented teams. And it's like, even if they're not that good in terms of their record, you just know, like I said, they're going to go hard. They're going to try to put you on your back because that's film. And that's something that they can say, you know, 10 years later that, hey, I made this play against Georgia and I did this. A lot of them, honestly, man, when you look at these rosters, a lot of these guys on Kentucky and South Carolina and, you know, Arkansas and all these teams, they were Georgia kids, a lot of them. And they wanted right. to come to the University of Georgia. So it's like when they come to Athens, they got something to prove. And so, yeah, that's what I remember most about playing those teams, you know, especially Kentucky, man. And they had a guy by the name of Randall Cobb when I played, man. Randall Cobb, fullback, John Connor. I can't forget that name because, you know, Terminator, John Connor. John Connor, yeah, the fullback, man. Those guys were – that was one of the best teams that I played against, that Kentucky team. And, you know, Randall's still playing now with the Green Bay Packers. But, yeah, like those teams, if you give them confidence, as we saw this past weekend with Bama and Texas A&M, you give them confidence and you let them believe that they have a chance, and it turns – all of a sudden it turns into a long day.
How impressive is it to you what Mark Stoops has done there? Because this is – I mean, look, they haven't been 6-0 before. I think this is the first time they've been 6-0 since 1950. So yeah. I'm not saying that. But he has turned Kentucky football in, and everybody in the country knows that's a basketball school, right. into a place where you got to go grind out a win. And they are in contention to go to a bowl and be there. And I don't know. I feel like he had to overcome a lot to get them in the spot that they're in now. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, no, it's extremely impressive, man. Anytime you're in the SEC and you can string together even a halfway productive season, you know, over 500, that's extremely impressive because we all know it's an arms race, man. Like, everybody's competing recruiting-wise. Everybody's competing, and the margin of error is so small. When you look at those big games, you know, Kentucky, Florida, you know, all those rivalry games, which it seems like every week is a rivalry game when you're in the SEC. So to be able to do that, man, like I was talking about earlier with Georgia, like it doesn't just start in the season. Like it starts long before then, before the cameras, before, you know, any of the game days or ESPN show up. Like you got to put that work in during the off season, summertime in the heat, man. And then, you know, even your staff, your weight training staff, your academic staff, like there's so many different components that people don't see that play a role in that overall success, man. So for him to be able to do that in the short amount of time is extremely, extremely impressive. And then even more so, it says a lot about his leadership for these guys to buy in the way that they have and be able to put that product out on the field.
Yeah, I think they're going to present a really compelling matchup this weekend just because of the way they are currently built this season. Boss and I talked about this in our recap episode over the weekend, but it's a lot of strength on strength. You know, they want to run the football. Their offensive line is good. They've been good in their front seven this year. And then obviously Georgia's defense is what it is. So I think it's going to make for an interesting matchup on Saturday. The number is a bit high, but we'll see. And we'll talk about that a little more, but we want to talk to you about some other games coming up this weekend, because I know you're not just tuned into the Dogs, you're tuned into college football as well. So we're going to have you pick some games with us against the spread for the weekend. And in all honesty, it's not a super electric slate this week. I think Georgia is the only close to top 10 matchup, Georgia and Kentucky. And now maybe there's only one other ranked on rank matchup. And I think that's a barely. I think Texas squeezed into the back of the top 25 in the AP. So their game with Oklahoma State's a top 25 game, but still some interesting games nonetheless. And the one we want to start with you is, and we've started picking them each week just because we love Coach Tucker so much. So we're going to pick the Michigan State and Indiana game. Coach Tucker's got Michigan State undefeated going to Indiana, and they are 3.5-point road favorites against the Hoosiers. Who do you like in that one?
Yeah, I like Michigan State. I think they've been consistently showing themselves as a premier team, and they're making some noise. But I feel like they're gonna definitely be able to cover that. It's not gonna be easy, of course, which is what explains that spread. So, and then they're playing in Indiana's house, so I think early on it's definitely gonna be a fight. But I see them pulling through for sure.
You're tuned into leadership and mindset. Don't you feel that Coach Tucker's one of the best at that? Not just from his days as an assistant at Alabama and at Georgia, but I just feel like the mindset he's got those kids playing with and the way he kind of affirms things is on an elite level.
Yeah, I haven't studied him too much, but I know that is what is the edge, man, at that level, especially when you're, like I said before, dealing with 18 to 21-year-olds. Like, you have to really create that competitive edge by investing in their mindset, by getting them to have that, even the language, right? That championship language, using one-liners and trigger words and things like that. So, you know, coaches who are able to understand that and really invest in it and not just say, you know, be mentally tough, but actually help guys like develop the strategies and the tools to build that. Like, they're always successful. Like, why, you know, when you look at Bama, when you look at Georgia and their consistent level of success, there's a reason why. And it's not just because of the weight room and because they're doing speed and agility drills and because they're bringing in the right coaches. Like, no, they do a lot of other things that people don't necessarily know about that create that mental edge. And I feel like once you do that, man, especially for guys who are already talented, already have ability, it just takes things to another level.
All right, boss, I think I know where you sit on this, but who you got in this one?
Michigan State's been one of the more impressive teams this year. And that running back, I mean, Walker, I think his name is. I mean, he's been lights out lately. I think they pull away early third quarter and this turns into a kind of a rout later on. I think it's close in the first half because it's in Indiana's house. But Indiana's not Indiana from last year. They're just not. So I think Michigan State rolls late.
Yeah, I love where Coach Tucker has this team. They just seem to be bought in, and I think they are gunning to be undefeated when that Michigan game comes calling, which will be a monster matchup. But I'm with y'all. I like the Spartans. I think Coach Tucker's got these guys playing great, and I think they will take care of their business on the road to stay undefeated. All right, second game this week is another interesting one. Georgia's Peach Bowl opponent, who we've been picking a lot this year, Cincinnati, having a great year, coming off a massive win over a Temple team led by former Georgia quarterback Dwan Mathis, has UCF coming to their home field. And Cincinnati is a 20.5-point favorite. Who do you like in that one, Rennie?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Cincinnati on that one. I think they're going to continue to build off that momentum that they've been building this year and have some success.
What do you think, boss?
As I said last week, Cincinnati has to demolish teams to really get in the playoff when the discussion comes. And they're going to have to continue to do it week in and week out because the next ranked team they play is SMU, if SMU stays undefeated. And let's face it, Gus is the coach at UCF. It just doesn't impress me much. Cincinnati rolls. They're going to win by 35, 40.
Completely reactionary pick. I took Dwan Mathis and the Owls last week. to cover, what was the number, like 29.5, and they got an absolutely dump truck. So I will doubt Cincinnati no more. I'm going to take them to cover that number as well, but that's a completely reactionary pick from last week. Okay, I think this next game is compelling because of what happened on Saturday at the Red River Shootout. I still, as of Monday morning when we're having this conversation, cannot believe Texas did not win that football game. So how do they respond now? They have a home game against an undefeated Oklahoma State team that has looked formidable, and they are a home favorite by 6.5. How do you think they respond after the disappointing end to the game in Dallas last week, Rennie?
I mean, the leadership is definitely going to show here, right? Like, when how they are able to bounce back, and then being at home, I think they're definitely going to have a chip on their shoulder to make sure that they get their shit back, you know, back sailing the right way. And so I think they're going to bounce back. I think that this is an opportunity and a catalyst for them to really showcase who they are in front of their home fans and get things back steered in the right direction, like I said.
What do you think, boss? How do you think they respond from that?
I think Texas wins, but I think it's close. I'm really curious to see how Thompson's hand is. because he didn't really look the same after he hit his hand on the defensive lineman's helmet in the second half. He was a little off. But Oklahoma State's quarterback likes to throw it to the other team. So I see it being close. I'm taking Oklahoma State to cover, but I think Texas wins.
It feels weird to say this because I feel like it's usually the opposite when we're talking about Oklahoma State. But after watching Texas the last few weeks, I just don't know if Oklahoma State can score points and stay with them. They don't seem as high-flying as you would generally expect from a Gundy-type team. And so I don't know. Texas has a lot of weapons. I do think that's a good point about the quarterback's hand because they obviously look different in the second half. And I do worry about their defense. But in some ways, I think Oklahoma making the quarterback switch put the defense on skates a little bit. I think you prepare all week for one guy and then you see somebody else and maybe you're not as locked in as you once were. So I don't know. I think I'm going to go with the Longhorns as well. I think they rebound this week. I think Sark's got them playing great offense. So I think they'll cover that number. This is another interesting one. Another team coming off a heartbreak. Arkansas, gosh, I mean, whale of a game with Ole Miss. That noon slate was unbelievable on Saturday. I mean, if you're a college football fan, the noon slate gave you all you wanted and more. And they make the choice to go for two after they score the touchdown to tie it, which Boss and I both loved. Go for that win, baby. Love that. Love Coach Pittman. And they are getting Auburn in Fayetteville, and they are favored by 3.5. Who do you like in that one, Reddy?
Yeah, I definitely think that's going to be another dogfight for sure. And the key for Arkansas is, will they be able to stop the run? Will they be able to stop Tank Bigsby? Because I know their offense, you know, is able to get the job done for the most part. They got some great wide receivers, and their quarterback's been playing pretty well for the most part. And I think they're going to learn from last week and not, you know, try to make those harsh decisions. Definitely think it's going to be close. It's going to be a dogfight. Auburn's quarterback's been really inconsistent, as we saw last week. He tries to do too much at times. So I think that might get them in trouble and allow Arkansas to have the edge.
What do you think, Boss?
Everyone who's ever listened to this show knows that I am not a Bo Nix fan at all. And as long as he is the starter of Auburn, I will not pick Auburn. So Arkansas.
Yeah.
I like Arkansas having the home field in this. I thought they played well offensively last week. If you had told me that game was going to go like it did, that it was going to be a shootout like that, I would have told you Ole Miss was just going to dump truck them. So I was really impressed with how they hung going back and forth. I was very, very surprised that Barry Odom's defense gave up 52 points. I think they will have an axe to grind this week. And I think, unfortunately, Bo Nix and the Auburn offense are going to be the ones that receive the brunt of that punishment. So I like Arkansas to rebound this week after two losses against two really tough opponents and get themselves back on track. I like the Razorbacks. Pig Suey. This is another one that interesting, right? Death Valley, not the Death Valley we're all used to, apparently. Auburn went in there and stole a win, and then LSU just got their doors blown off by Kentucky. And they've got a Florida team coming to town who I don't know what Florida is. Rennie, we had Cole Wilcox on the show last week, and he said, other than the academies, Florida is the most one-dimensional school in the country. So Florida is a 9.5-point road favorite going into Death Valley. Who do you like in that one, Ray?
Yeah, I think Florida gets the job done. Definitely, you know, not with the ease. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. Being that LSU is at home and, you know, they're, of course, going to be fighting this, just stay alive. But, yeah, I think Florida is definitely going to pull through towards the end of the game.
What you think on this one, Boss?
I hate myself for this pick, but I think LSU has quit. I really do. I think Ogeron's on borrowed time. I was surprised he wasn't fired this week, honestly. I don't think he survives the season. Florida, I think, is going to win, and I don't think it's going to be close. They look so disinterested out there. They just – the players who can go look like they're thinking about Sundays, and the ones who are there that can't go on Sundays look like they're thinking about transferring. They just look like they don't care.
I, in some ways, think Bo Nix and Auburn broke their spirit. I think if they hold on and win that game in Death Valley, I think they probably looked different last week, and maybe I feel differently about this. So I'm with you on that piece, and I'm also with you that, boy, do I hate myself for this. It just doesn't feel right in my mouth. I don't even like saying it, because anything that's associated with Florida just makes me feel like I'm throwing up a little bit in my mouth. But yes. I think I'm going to have to pick them, too. I just think – I don't know who LSU is. What if somebody asks you what's LSU's identity this year? I don't know what it is. And that's weird to say about an LSU team where you know that roster is loaded top to bottom. I'm kind of with you, boss. I think they've just kind of thrown it in a little bit. And that's sad to say, you know. But it is what it is. I think Florida's going to win that ball game and set up a compelling matchup in the cocktail party in a couple weeks coming off a big win for them. All right, this is one where I think, to Rennie's point, a team is going to have to manage what they just dealt with, right? So A&M is coming off a monster win. Jimbo Fisher becoming the first Nick Saban assistant to beat him. They were unranked. They were almost 3-touchdown underdogs. Monster win over Alabama. Now they got to go play Mizzou in Columbia at 11 a.m. Central time. And they're favored by 8.5 against the Mizzou team, who has frankly looked pretty lost since they couldn't pull it out against Boston College up in Chestnut Hill. So who do you like in this one, Rennie?
Definitely like Texas A&M. I think they're going to continue to build on, you know, the success from last week or from this past weekend and continue just building that confidence. I mean, that's the biggest thing that you saw last week. I mean, guys weren't just making plays, but they're finishing the plays. They were going extra hard. They're doing what they need to do. And I think once you're able to put that out there and see what you're capable of and get the win, that just creates a whole new just mindset collectively. So I expect them to win.
How about you, boss?
I have been unimpressed with Zach Calzada since he took over for Haynes King when he broke his foot until last week. And it wasn't the first half. It was the second half when things were tough. And he showed a lot of moxie and being able to lead them back to tie it up and then lead them on that winning drive. And especially after getting his ankle rolled on the tying touchdown and then still coming back out there and leading them. And I think that momentum and that confidence for him is going to lead them through the rest of the season. Right. And I think that realistically they could run the table. That defense is really talented. And Mizzou, like you said, they look lost. I don't think this is going to be close 11 a.m. I mean, they could pull another Tennessee. They could put up 62 on them if they wanted to. I don't think Jimbo's that type of coach, but they really could if they wanted to.
Yeah, I'm with y'all. I like Texas A&M in this. I think they are going to be riding a huge wave of momentum, and it's not going to be one of these where they're like kind of cashed out. I think to you, this is more of a galvanizing win because, look, they had high expectations coming into the year, and to have two conference losses already, and you got all the people going, man, Jimmy Sexton, the greatest agent in America, got Jimbo that extension. And they're 0-2 in the conference. And so that's a monster win. And I'm with you. I think Calzada kind of gets the team behind him after that performance. That's his ball club now. And I think they'll go into Columbia and take care of business. This matchup would have been much more compelling if BYU had taken care of their business against Boise State last week. But they did not. But still, good football team. Good enough where prior to the Boise State game, College Game Day was doing segments on them about will they sneak into the playoff and who gets in if them and Cincinnati are undefeated. So they're going to Waco to play Baylor. Baylor, who's also having a good year, 5.5-point home favorite. Who do you like in that one, Rennie?
Going to go with Baylor. Don't got many comments on them because I haven't watched much Baylor football, but yeah, I'm going to go with Baylor.
What you think, boss? You think BYU can go down there and get it done, or you like the Bears?
I think it's close. I think BYU covers it. I think Baylor wins. I love what Aranda's doing there. I really do. After we picked this game, a Baylor game a couple weeks ago, I've actually started paying attention to them. So because I got burned on that, I love what they're doing there. I love what he's done there. He's made them very – he's turned that defense really into what he did there at LSU. And the defense is nasty. But I still think BYU has enough to keep it close because the offense really – isn't a Baylor offense that you expect. They're not that high flying, you know, put up a ton of points like they are that we're used to from them.
I think I'm going to roll with the Bears. I think I'll take the Bears to cover this. I think BYU got exposed a little bit in that Boise State game. I think their schedule had been a little light until that point. And I think Baylor is doing well. And to your point, I think David Randall's got them playing tough defense. And I don't know, man, I just think defense is something you kind of hang your hat on. So I'm going to take the Bears in this one too. Okay, another rebound game. Alabama got to go to Starkville, deal with all them cowbells, play Mississippi State and Coach Leach and that wild offense. They're favored by 17.5 coming off that loss. Who you liking that one, Rennie?
Yeah, I definitely think Bama's going to come out, you know, strong after that loss and really take out their frustrations on Mississippi State. I really expect to see them kind of on like a new mission and really try to get back to that standard that they had at the beginning of the season and what we're used to.
What you think, boss?
I feel sorry for the pirate ship this week. I really do. I love Mike Leach, but they're going to – they're in for a rough week. They really are. Alabama is going to try to assert dominance early and get up big and then just go after Will Rogers.
So I can tell you – I can tell you boys this. There's a lot of places I wouldn't want to be this week, but number one on that list is Tuscaloosa inside the football facility. Those boys are in for a week this week, and they are going to let it all out against Mississippi State. I think they cover this, and it is a long day to be a Bulldog fan from the West this week because the Crimson Tide are coming for some vengeance. Okay, Ole Miss coming off a really exciting win against Arkansas. Matt Corral looked good. They dropped half 100. Tennessee just blew the doors off South Carolina and has discovered an offense here the last 2 weeks that hadn't been seen in Knoxville in a decade probably. Ole Miss is favored by 3.5 going to see that Vile Navy. Who do you like in this one, Rennie?
Yeah, I like Ole Miss. I think they're definitely going to get the job done. They've been developing their identity over these last couple of weeks and putting together, like you said, a solid effort offensively. So I think they're definitely going to win and believe they're going to cover that spread.
Other than the over, boss, what do you like in this one?
Okay. The narrative for Georgia all season is that Georgia hasn't played anybody. Well, Tennessee's put up all these points against, but who have they played? Who has Tennessee put these points up against? Missouri and South Carolina. I don't know who Tennessee is yet. Mississippi really can't stop anybody, but nobody can stop Mississippi other than Bama so far. I think Mississippi's going to score at will and stop them just enough. And 3.5 is not a lot. So I was expecting the spread to be much higher. I think Mississippi wins really with ease, and Tennessee's trying to play catch up all game.
Yeah, I'm with y'all. I like Ole Miss to cover this. I think that offense is real. I think Matt Corral is real. And I think if you're a defense, he's got to be terrible to prepare for. And in all honesty, you know, that Bama game, the score doesn't tell the whole story, right? I mean, Lane goes for, what, 3/4 downs in the first quarter, and they're behind the eight ball before they even really have a shot. It's 21-0. Well, ball game's over then. But, I mean, I still thought he looked good and played a pretty good ball game. So, yeah, I think it's all gas, no brakes for Ole Miss this week. I think they are going to hurt Vile Nation's heart all week long. So, yeah, I'm with y'all. All right, this is the one. This is why we're here. Big game this weekend, number one versus number 11. The surprising Kentucky Wildcats coming between the hedges, and the Dogs are favored by 21.5. What do you like in this one, Rennie?
Definitely like the Dogs. I mean, you know, I really believe, you know, regardless of who we have out there, JT Daniels, mailman, will be able to get the job done. I think it's going to be a close game for probably the first half with Kentucky coming in there with a chip on their shoulder. But I feel like the Dogs will definitely pull away with that similar rushing attack that we had last week. And, we're starting to slowly get those playmakers back as well. Darnell Washington and, you know, Tyke Smith and all these guys are slowly getting back to game form. So, yeah, I expect us to continue on with our level of dominance and being elite.
I want to ask you about this, Rennie, about the Dogs offense, because they obviously haven't had a lot of their weapons, right?
Right.
And what have you seen from the defensive mindset that Coach Monken is doing to put the guys that are out there in positions to win and positions to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, it's really about that combination of not just Monken, but, you know, Monken and the mailman, just his level of maturity and poise and the fact that, like, whether it's, like, regardless of if you have him in there or JT, like, Monken's able to open up the playbook so much. Like, that's the biggest thing that I see is just – who you have under that command, the fact that we have so many different tools. We got Brock Bowers, we got Ladd McConkey, you know, these guys who we weren't even really expecting to be contributors, who now add to the dynamics of, like, all the talent we already have. And then you now have, we got the forehead monster with the bats, we got Cook, we got just so many tools and weapons to work with. Like, you can Cook alone, you can put him out, you know, split him out wide, put him in the backfield. Like, you really don't know what you're going to get defensively. And that's the most frustrating thing, because you're chasing down a run play, you're trying to stop Zeus. Next play, you're trying to stop, you know, stop McConkey. Next play is Brock Bowers. He creates mismatches. Now you got Darnell Washington. So it's a very, very hard offense to really game plan against, because it's so balanced. And then you add in Stetson's, the fact that he can run the ball as well, too. So you got to account for him. So there's just so many different dynamics to our offense, which I know if I'm Todd, the offense coordinator, man, I'm just like a kid in the candy store, because you really can do whatever you want.
Okay, take me inside the film room real quick. And your linebackers coach sits you down and he pulls up the film and he says, okay, Rennie, you got zero this week. You're going to have to man him in pass coverage and you're going to have to shed him to get the running back. How are you feeling about that?
I mean, for me, I'm a heart, man, so I'm going to give him everything I got. But in the back of my mind, I'll be like, man, that's a big ass. Yeah, I'm definitely getting some extra sets in the weight room. I'm getting as much as I can on the bench press and like squatting as much as I can going into that game. Because he is a grown man. That dude is, I don't know. He looks like he was created in a lab, for real. You got him.
Yeah.
I can imagine like taking him on and then like Zeus running right behind him. I mean, that's intimidating for sure. And just you may do well for that first half, like I said, but then over time, that thing just, that wears you down. You know, you got so many guys, like I said, like him, Zeus, and you got to chase Cook, and you got to chase, you know, Brock Bowers on the next play. Then, you know, there's even guys who we haven't really targeted that much who were major targets for us last year, Burton. You know, you haven't heard his name a lot. But that's a tough one.
Genetically, it's just not fair that a man could be that grown and that fast. And then he almost makes catch of the year on the sideline in the Auburn game, just one hand in it. So like to have all those things and the hand eye coordination, man, that ain't fair. That's just, he hit the genetic. I mean, we saw him at the Clemson game and like we had seen him last season, and look, he was otherworldly big last year, but he walked out for the Clemson game and we all just kind of looked at each other like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah,
like
right.
they're always going to win the walk off the bus game. I'm just going to tell you that.
Yeah. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. That's one thing. Kirby is like changed Georgia in that way, in the biggest way, just like that eye test. I mean, you got some monsters there now. I mean, between Jordan Davis and Darnell and, you know, some of the other guys, man, it's even the DBs. I mean, we never really had consistently tall, like just huge DBs. And now, you know, that's kind of become a staple.
All right, boss, what you think on this? How you feel about that number? Did it make you nervous at all, or you think they're blowing that away?
It made me nervous yesterday when we were talking about this on our recap episode. The more and more I thought about it, though, the strength on strength, I'm going to go with Georgia strength beating Kentucky strength. And I think I agree with Rennie. I think it's going to be close early. And I think Georgia does what they do, and they wear down people with their depth and they pull away. I don't think it's going to be like really close, but I could see it being like a, you know, 10-point game at halftime. And then they pull away late. I don't see a 14-3 game like it was last season. I don't see it being close like that, and that being the final score. But I can't see Kentucky scoring, you know, 24, 27 points on this defense. And I can see Georgia still scoring 35 on Kentucky. That's where I come with it. So I think Georgia covers.
Yeah, so that's the rub for me, right? Kentucky has to run the football. If they don't run the football, they can't win. Guess what, America? Ain't nobody running the football against this Georgia defense. So if you're telling me the proposition is Will Levis has to beat the Georgia Bulldogs defense, that ain't happening. I'm sorry. He's a good player, and they have done very well. I like a lot of their weapons. I think that Christopher Rodriguez is a weapon in the backfield. What's the guy that plays out wide? Wandale Robinson?
Yeah, Wandale Robinson.
That kid can play, man. I mean, they have a good football team, and Coach Stoops does a fantastic job there. They ain't seen nothing like this roster. I'm sorry. They're not going to be able to do it. I'm with y'all, though. I think it will be tight early because Kentucky's going to be able to control some clock based on what they do offensively. But I think the Dogs pull away late. I think this is something too that has been a theme of Kirby's tenure as head coach, not just this year, but all the way through. I would love to see some numbers around this. You and my boss are not smart enough to do this, but I would love to see somebody put some numbers around who has been a better third quarter team in the United States of America than the Georgia Bulldogs since Kirby Smart took over as head coach. I don't think there's any team better that comes out any better prepared making halftime adjustments to then combat what the other team had come in and planned to do. And I think that will be the difference maker this week too. I think the Dogs have a really, really big third quarter and kind of run away with it as the game is going on. So,
yeah.
Well, look, Rennie, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I hope you have a fantastic week, not only because we want you to win, but because if you have a good week, me and boss are going to have a good week.
All right.
So, yeah, you're fighting for the 10 pounds of red, man. We want that title belt residing in the house with you. So,
definitely, man. Well, we're having me on, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Rennie. Tell everybody who's listening how they can follow and support you.
Yeah, so the best way or easiest way to support is just by going on my website, RennieKern.com. And then I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that good stuff. So all just at Rennie Curran. And yeah, love to connect.
All right, well, we will link all of that in our show notes. And Rennie, thank you so much for being so gracious with your time today and hanging out with us. And go Dogs.
Yes, sir. Go Dogs. Appreciate y'all.
Hey, George is better now.